Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on this 31st of October 2012, Halloween night. And I'm bringing to you from my broadcasting bunker here offshore, currently not operating from within Australia. I'm bringing you stories and mysteries that are unexplained. The questions about what is going on in the world that have not been covered by the mainstream. Very strange and very weird, and certainly we would think not incompatible with a Halloween night. But, you know, the way the world works these days and the way Western civilization has evolved or devolved, it's like it's Halloween every day. I mean, everything has become weird. The basic forms of human discourse, the basic trappings of civilization, seem to have been kind of gradually lost. And yet, the world continues. The trains keep running, the traffic flows, the electricity runs through the grids, the internet functions, people get up, they go to work, they take care of their families, they eat, they sleep. We're going through some kind of transformation, that's all I can say. That's all I can kind of articulate in terms of what is actually going on the planet at this point in time. Anyway, you're very welcome to the show. My name's Hereward Fenton, and I'll be going through a number of news stories tonight. And in the second hour, I hope to be speaking to Josh Jackson, who will be joining us again from Germany. Josh and I have both found difficulties maintaining our presence in Australia. Personally, I feel that the circumstances of life in Australia have become intolerable. And, of course, in many ways, you know, there is no huge problem. I mean, the standard of living is okay. There's food on the table. Life goes on. And yet, there is a kind of an intolerability about the way in which those who are running things, the people who are running the country, the people who are running the major corporations, there is an intolerability about the way we are being lied to, manipulated, ripped off, and generally messed around by these people. And of course, it's the thin end of the wedge. You see this happening and you can only expect that this must get worse, that this must continue and it will just increase. And because we don't see any actions being taken to roll it back, we don't see any mass public outcry, any mass public demonstration, then it seems almost certain with the kind of inevitability, the momentum that oppression and totalitarianism has, that it will increase. And unfortunately, we don't see much evidence of any kind of serious alternate media developing in Australia that really comes to grips with the depth of the deception and the depths of the criminal conduct of the ruling elites. I mean, we do have some alternate media. We've got Crikey.com and a number of websites like that that are certainly providing some reflection, but what we tend to find is that these alternate media websites are actually just pushing various forms of propaganda in themselves. They're giving you a little bit of truth, and then they're giving you more deception, more spin. We don't really know who's running them. This site, this website, this podcast is a completely independent production. And I have eschewed any form of funding and support from any kind of external parties hasn't really offered itself much. But I mean, in the instances where it has, I've actually chosen to remain completely independent rather than take a cent from anyone who might, you know, give me some benefit, give me some money, and then look to possibly influence what I'm doing. Of course, I do look forward to getting subscriptions from my listeners, and that's actually something I'm working on at the moment. But it's never really been at the forefront of my thinking. I've obviously delayed doing that many years. It's never really been the driving force, but it is something that is actually in progress at the moment that I'm working on. But just getting back to this question of the lack of any real voices out there. And of course, there's Leon Pittard, Fair Dinkum Radio, who popped up very recently. He was doing a great job, and he's been on this show a couple of times. And of course, there's Aussie Beach TV. Again, you know, I don't want to downplay what exists and what is out there. Jack Russell from Aussie Beach TV, a very innovative, quirky show that uses beautiful women to get information out into the mainstream, is great. But, you know, we're just seeing these very, very tentative efforts. And, of course, this show is, in a sense, you know, so small scale, it can't reach many people. And so we look at the landscape. We look at the landscape of basically a population that is bowed down, that has simply accepted oppression, that seems to be deeply psychologically mired in an inability to do anything to lift themselves out of the mire. And it really, really is quite a serious situation, ladies and gentlemen. And it will end badly. I hate to be negative about it. I mean, I really do hate being negative, but it will end badly. And of course, the vast majority of people in the mainstream who are not conspiracy theorists will simply say, look, you know, everything's fine, you know, the world is as it is. There are problems, but, you know, there's always been problems. Get over yourself, just move along, right? And that bulk of people will carry us along to the worst possible outcome. But unfortunately, you know, the fringes of the society that recognize there is a major problem here themselves are so caught up often in tangential things, concerns that are perhaps a little bit paranoiac. And I believe that's inevitable. I believe in a situation where we have such a pressure of tyranny and oppression coming down upon us, that those who are awake to it will themselves be affected by it in a way that makes them disabled in some way, that sort of cripples them. And this is what I do see with many people who are aware to many of the deceptions, awake to a lot of what is going on, and yet they can't action anything. And then they get carried off in one little thread that obsesses them, say, as I was discussing last week, with the white trails across the sky, sometimes known as chemtrails. And yet even there, they can't do anything. They feel totally immobilized and paralyzed. And the purpose of this show is hopefully to be an antidote to that. It's an antidote to that feeling of paralysis. It's a way of one mind, one soul, one spiritual entity reaching out to other spiritual entities out there to basically say, yes, you know. And I was going to say, yes, we can. I suddenly felt like I'm Obama. But the power of these neuro-linguistic programming statements cannot be underestimated. Yes, we can is a very important, empowering statement. And I want to make that. Because the feeling of disempowerment that you have, the feeling that you have that there is nothing that you can do to fix anything and nothing that you can do to change anything, that feeling is itself the biggest cause of the problem that we are in. And that's what I believe. That feeling of disempowerment is disempowerment. Change the feeling and you change the reality. I really do believe that that is true. And I also would suggest to you that many, many people don't understand this point. Because they make observations, they look at what's going on in the world, and they correct observations. But then from those observations, instead of, you know, charging forth and just tearing it all down and just taking some action, they sit back and go, oh, there's no point. No, it's inevitable. Nothing we can do. It's all too powerful. You know, they're too big, I'm too small. There is nothing that we can do. So we'll just sit here and mull over the wickedness and the evil that we see and feel isolated. And that's the way we'll just eke out the rest of our lives. Because we feel that we know something that other people don't know. And we'll just feed on that. We'll feed on that knowledge that we have, that we know something that other people don't know. See, that's actually not good enough. That won't advance the cause of freedom, truth, justice, and hope. You've actually got to take some risks. You've got to be prepared to take a fall. I mean, some people are going to have to take a few bullets. This really is necessary. So again, you know, to the people who sort of sit back and just say, well, you know, there's no point in taking action. We can't do anything. And, you know, that also applies to the ones who say, well, we're just going to withdraw. We're just going to form our little alternative societies. We're going to secede from the body politic. Again, you know, all you're doing by taking that course of action is further empowering the tyranny and the totalitarianism that is coming down upon you. You are not making one iota of difference to the outcomes when you take the position of saying that you're going to withdraw or that you're going to do nothing or that there's no point in doing anything. And if you could only see yourself, if you could just like see yourself in a mirror to understand that you are creating this destiny, and collectively, thousands, millions of people are creating the destiny of their destruction by their inbuilt psychological position. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this break, and I'll be covering a number of important stories. Please stay with me.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. Truth News Radio can be found on the internet at truthnews.com.au and can be found on the FM dial in a number of places in the United States. Broadcasting out of Austin, Texas, the Logos Radio Network carries our show. And you can get the archives of the show from Logos Radio Network or from truthnews.com.au. And we've got a number of interesting features on the site. A lot of articles are posted as well as the podcast. And I've recently started a forum on the website. So if you're browsing and you discover our site, please take a look at the new forum that I've opened up. We've just created a couple of subject areas initially. I've actually had an ongoing email discussion from a number of my friends regarding the question about the Apollo moon landings. And this is one that is just really quite a fascinating question and one which really gets tempers flared. And I don't take a strong position on saying one way or the other whether I think the Apollo moon landings really happened as described, whether they were completely fake or whether there was something in between. I would like to know. I think it's important, you know, and I have a lot of questions about the Apollo moon landings. I feel uncomfortable with the official record of it. I feel uncomfortable with the photographs, with the information that we now know about the Van Allen radiation belts, and the lack of any subsequent missions and the lack of any photographic evidence subsequent to those missions that would show the remains of the Apollo landing sites. The inability to basically repeat something that was apparently quite feasible, having done it five times, one would assume it would have been repeated. And, you know, the question of how expensive it is, well, I don't exactly know how expensive it is, but I would assume that the main cost is actually the rocket that gets you up into space. And they're sending stuff up into space all the time, right? So beyond that, I mean, once you're up in space, it's, I don't know exactly why it's so expensive, if you know what I mean, to send some people back to the moon or even just out into a deeper orbit beyond the Van Allen belts. But they won't do it. And there are no projects on the books. There is a Chinese rover mission planned, but again, no manned missions. And again, it's just something that I find mysterious and perplexing. And hopefully this new little forum I've started will encourage some facts. We may end up just getting a lot of flame wars and a lot of pointless argument and insults, but we'll see. And I'll get back to you if anything interesting comes up out of that forum. Now, I'd like to move on with some news. I've got a couple of Australian topics here. There's a new article here on joannenova.com.au. Joanne Nova, a very prominent climate change skeptic in Australia, been on this show, and she is an incredibly eloquent, very intelligent lady, former member of the Greens, I should point out. Someone who cares a lot about the environment, but who also cares a lot about the truth and cares about not promoting scientific fraud. And she came to the conclusion after speaking to her husband about it, her husband who worked for a important government department that was actually engaged in looking at climate change. It was, I believe, called the Australian Greenhouse Office, now called the Department of Climate Change. And look, what happened was Joanne had a moment of realization, you know, and she looked deeper into the facts, talked about it with her husband, and realized that that what she'd been told and what the Greens were heavily promoting as a very central plank of their policy was just lacking in scientific foundation. And so she started a blog, and it's become one of the biggest blogs, probably one of the biggest blogs on the internet. I mean, it's just a huge, very popular blog that gets a lot of contributions from scientists. well-educated people, people who've got facts and know what they're talking about. And she posts regularly on there. So anyway, a little promotion there for Joanne Nova. I'd recommend it. Take a look at the site straight away. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's really, really important. Now, there's a new article up here which the reason I want to talk about it is that not because it's so much to do with any new scientific information or specific debates about science. This is about the mental psychological attitude of those who are promoting climate alarmism. And, you know, there's something really nasty about it. There's something really nasty in the people who are promoting this view. And it's coming down from the top of the biggest organizations on the planet. The title of this article here is "Government Funds Anti-Science Name-Calling Crowd. Deniers and skeptics are old and will be gone soon." Now, just reading here from Joanne Nova, "There is a mindset, a world of view that's profoundly unreal, anti-science, and funded by the taxpayer from start to end. From a researcher who holds childish assumptions and misunderstands his own results, to the site that posts it all as if it were higher thought, to the trained communicator of science who then parrots the mistakes and insults half the population at the same time. Private money couldn't find a satire like The Conversation." Now, The Conversation, just opening the link there to that, theconversation.edu.au. "Scientific consensus shifts public opinion on climate change. People are more likely to believe that humans cause global warming if they are told that 90% of publishing climate scientists agree that it does, a new study has found. Despite overwhelming evidence showing that human activity is causing the planet to overheat, public concern is on the wane," said the study, titled "The Pivotal Role of Perceived Scientific Consensus in Acceptance of Science," and published in the journal Nature Climate Change. "One reason for this decline is the manufacture of doubt by political and vested interests, which often challenge the existence of the scientific consensus. The role of perceived consensus in shaping public opinion is therefore of considerable interest." Now, just referring back here to Joanne Nova's commentary on this article, she mentions here that in this article, one argument that's advanced to basically, I guess, make people who believe in climate change feel good about themselves is that they're saying that the people who don't profess climate alarmism are old and will be dead soon. So I'll just read you the exact quote. "We can say people are convinced by the consensus, but the big caveat is skeptics and climate change skeptics. These in particular are never going to be convinced. They will say the science doesn't work by vote and it's all about facts. Realistically, though, most of those skeptics are an older generation, and we are never going to convince them, but they will be disappearing from political discourse soon." That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's how we treat those who disagree with us. They will disappear. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Selfish goals. punchline after punchline, leaving us all, leaving us all.
Welcome back, you with Truth News. Great to be with you today. Well, we saw there in the last segment there the lows that the climate Nazis are willing to descend really seem to have no limit. Talking about people who disagree with you in terms of the fact that you expect them to disappear. And this is really going on. I mean, and these people believe themselves to be academics. Well, in fact, they are academics. I mean, they're in universities. They're writing papers. They are pulling in quite a lot of money too. I mean, this is an intolerable situation. I mentioned earlier about how intolerable it is. I'm not kidding around. I mean, if you put up with that, you can't have any self-respect. If you know what's going on and you're living in a society where people in important university tenured positions that have incredible influence and what your children will be exposed to when they go to university, if you're going to put up with that, you'll be putting up with concentration camps too. I mean, it won't stop at any one point. But let's just focus for a little bit on the intellectual travesty of some of the comments in that previous article that I was reading. The writer was talking about the concept of perceived consensus. And what he was saying is that if people believe there's a consensus in a certain topic, especially if they believe there's a consensus of experts, then they will be more likely to believe it. Now, of course, that may be true. But this is being advanced as a strategy. This is actually incredibly contemptuous, incredibly high-handed. To believe that is a legitimate way of communicating in a scientific academic journal. These people need to be put out of their jobs. There really does need to be some kind of mass response to this. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened. And I fear that when it does happen, it will probably be misdirected as well. Because I know there's a lot of really good people who want to do something, but, you know, they're restrained. But then the ones who end up doing something tend to be the ones that are not restrained and that have perhaps bad intentions, you know. So I can actually see outcomes down the track which are not going to be pretty. There's a lot of anger here. We've got a lot of anger against these people, against the lies that they've been foisting upon us. I'd like to move to another story. I've got an article here from the ABC and I've got an audio clip. Parliamentary briefing on Julian Assange. And this is dated 30th of October. Now, it may actually already have occurred and I'll try and dig up the information on that. But I've got a blog posting from abc.net.au saying that there will be a cross-parliamentary briefing looking at the case of Julian Assange. Last year, a similar briefing was given to MPs. Now, I've got an audio clip here of Samantha Castro, co-founder of WikiLeaks Australian Citizens Alliance, being interviewed on the ABC to talk about the whole situation. So I'll just kick that off for you. It hopefully will explain some of the outcomes that we'll be seeing over the next period of time in relation to Julian Assange.
Tomorrow in Canberra, a cross-parliamentary briefing will take place looking at the case of Julian Assange. Now, last year a similar briefing was given to MPs, but a lot has changed since then. For the past 5 months, Julian Assange has been holed up inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London, protected under political asylum. So what does tomorrow's briefing mean for his situation and what, if any, effect will it have? Samantha Castro is the co-founder of the WikiLeaks Australian Citizens Alliance. Good evening, Samantha.
Good evening, Rebecca.
Firstly, what goes on at a parliamentary briefing?
Well, it's really just an opportunity for the politicians and their staff to sit down and get some well-informed information through a presentation of key facts and information from Jennifer Robinson, who's one of Julian Assange's legal team.
And Julian Burnside's going to be there as well. Do you know which members of parliament will be there?
Well, it's been co-convened by Andrew Leming and Senator Scott Ludlam, and also I think Doug Cameron is been involved in setting this one up, which is quite unique because it's really quite rare these days to have a Labor Party politician actually speaking out publicly. So I would expect that there should be a broad range of people from both sides of politics, plus independents and the Greens.
And what's prompted this briefing, or is it something that Julian Assange's lawyers have called for?
Well, I think what's prompted the briefing is that there has been a great deal of escalation of the threat to Julian's life and liberty since the last briefing. And one of the key components around that was the Gillard government's abandonment of Julian Assange and all 16 requests he put forward for support as a citizen of this country. So since then, we've seen FOI documents come out via Australian journalist Philip Dorling around the fact that even though publicly the foreign minister states that he knows nothing about the WikiLeaks grand jury and the United States pursuit of Julian Assange, that our government has been in close communication with Washington for the last 2 years, and that the Washington ambassador, Ms. Kim Beazley, has clearly stated in communication that the pursuit of Julian Assange is active, and we know that it's unprecedented in size and scale because of those documents. And of course, since then, Julian's also received political asylum from Ecuador. And there have been FOI documents from the United States that have revealed that Julian Assange, WikiLeaks, and their staff and supporters are potentially classified or categorized as enemies of the United States.
The Prime Minister Julia Gillard and Foreign Minister Bob Carr also insist that they have offered appropriate levels of help to Julian Assange. What is he actually seeking, or what are his lawyers actually seeking as a consequence of this briefing?
Well, I think it's important to note that the kind of consular assistance that they are suggesting they've given him are often things as simple as showing up to a court hearing. Julian Assange hasn't had face-to-face contact for well over a year with anyone from Australia in terms of consular assistance. So a lot of the times that Foreign Minister Bob Carr is fond of quoting that he's assisted Julian Assange are really just matters of formality of clarifying when the next hearing will be. In regards to what Jennifer Robinson and Julian Assange's legal team requested from the Australian government, there were 16 requests in total, which I won't go through all of them now, but the main points of what they were requesting for Mr. Assange as an Australian citizen who's not committed any crime in any country was to seek that Sweden would, one, potentially guarantee that they would not be onward extraditing him to the United States for any of his work associated to WikiLeaks, or for political purposes. And secondly, that Sweden has a customary mutual assistance provision in which they quite often travel to other countries to interview people that are suspected of far more serious crimes than the allegations against Mr. Assange. So they requested also that Sweden interview Mr. Assange in London, which would bring a speedy process for both of the women involved in these allegations and also for Julian Assange, without endangering him of further onward extradition.
But who can make that happen, Samantha? Is that something the Swedish authorities need to insist on? Is it something that Ecuador can have a hand in? Is it something that Australia can insist on?
That's a really good question. The mutual assistance program is used quite frequently across Europe and by Sweden, so it's quite unusual that they are refusing without giving any reason to use a typical process that they would embark on in terms of questioning someone, and he's only wanted for questioning. Mm. So I think what is interesting in this situation is that Ecuador put forward all of the requests that our Australian government refused to do for one of our own citizens. I think what is unique about this situation is that even though Julian Assange has political asylum with the Ecuador embassy, he is still an Australian citizen, and Foreign Minister Bob Carr is, you know, fairly capable of brokering deals where necessary. And I think that the Australian government has a role to play in ensuring its own citizens aren't thrown overboard. And they could certainly apply diplomatic and political pressure to resolve this situation in a way that is just for everybody. So I do believe the Australian government has a role to play in this process. But we must not forget that the pressure is coming from the United States, and that's a very formidable pressure for all countries in this diplomatic chain of events.
My guest is Samantha Castro. She's the co-founder of the WikiLeaks Australian Citizens Alliance.
Just pause it there. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'll continue with that interview after the break. And please stay with us for hour two. We've got a lot of news coming up. Don't go away. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I'll just continue with the interview there with Samantha Castro, co-founder of WikiLeaks Australian Citizens Alliance, that was conducted on ABC Radio within the last couple of days.
Giving you a briefing ahead of tomorrow's cross-parliamentary briefing that's occurring in Canberra, looking at the case of Julian Assange. His lawyer, Jennifer Robertson, also Julian Burnside, will be there briefing MPs from a number of political sides. Samantha, there was a briefing in March last year. Did anything come of that?
Well, I think that a lot more people in positions of elected authority became aware of the situation that was going on. And it's taken quite a while to have people from the Labor Party actually being prepared to speak out. So if anything came from it, I guess it was more awareness and understanding of the complexity and the very real threats to Julian Assange's life and liberty from the United States, who are actively pursuing a prosecution against him. So in terms of the Australian government actually stepping up to the plate and doing what they do to should do to protect an Australian citizen, no, absolutely not. In fact, what we've had is nothing but blanket denials from not only the Foreign Minister, but also from the Attorney General, General Nicola Roxon, and also from our own Prime Minister.
And are you saying that what Kim Beazley has said on the record directly contrasts with what the Foreign Minister and Prime Minister has said?
Absolutely. The FOI cables that Philip Dolling wrote about, and you can Google up his articles and look at them, clearly show that Washington is aware that there is an active pursuit of Julian Assange investigation in unprecedented size and scale. In fact, it totals to an amount of 42,000 FBI documents, to be clear. So this is a very large investigation into someone that our government claims that our ally has no interest in. And he clearly stated that he wanted to be warned ahead of time of when they intended to act on that prosecution so that their ministry and their government, meaning Australia, could prepare appropriate responses. So our Australian government is pretty much selling an Australian citizen down the river for a political and military alliance, and it's something that we should all be deeply concerned about, because absolutely somebody is not telling the truth.
What about at a personal level? There have been reports recently that Julian Assange was in poor health, that he had lost a great deal of weight. He spent many months living indoors. Are you aware of his physical condition?
I think that Julian Assange has been under an extraordinary amount of pressure, and perhaps the only people that are under more pressure are the alleged whistleblowers such as Bradley Manning and also Jeremy Hammond, who is alleged to have leaked the global intelligence files.
I'll just leave it there. This is quite an interesting little interview, and I think it really highlights again the sheer nastiness of the people that are running things in our country. And of course, you know, to emphasize this country is not very useful. These people are connected to a cabal that is running many countries around the world. They appear to be ordinary people. They appear to be just ordinary public servants, politicians doing their job. But there is something particularly nasty about these people. I mean, what they're doing to Julian Assange, the way he is being hung out to dry, is cold to the point of, you know, it almost makes me believe that there is some kind of like psychopathic reptilian conspiracy going on here. Of course, I don't subscribe to wacky ideas, but the point here is that there is something, there's something gone bad in the quality of our society and the quality of the people, individuals who are in positions of power and authority. There is something gone really bad in these people, and I think it's got to be addressed. I think it actually has to be, we've got to reach the point where we say, hey, these people shouldn't be doing that. And, you know, I think that we need to put aside questions and discussions and arguments about the left and the right, about libertarianism and free market versus socialism and central planning and collectivism. Because those arguments, and they're all important and valid arguments, have nothing to do with the reality here about the people concerned. Of course, there are philosophical underpinnings to the actions and the mentality of people generally. And I certainly lean towards a libertarian viewpoint, and I'm, you know, cautious and uncomfortable with government having too much control. I'm cautious and uncomfortable with collectivist solutions to the question of how we manage society. But of course, that's justified by history, and that's very, very clearly shown in the past how when we get the hive mind function taking over in society, it almost inevitably degenerates into some form of mass psychosis, ending in mega death. You know, that does happen, has happened many times, and I believe will happen again. But there are a lot of arguments about how we might manage society, how we might manage the economy. And I think if you've got enlightened people who are emotionally and spiritually awake and free, I think almost any system can work. I don't think the argument that the real problem we've got is about which system will work and which system will save the world. We really have to confront that there is a deep darkness within many people in our times now, and that has to be exposed, because the clear-headed, good-hearted people, the ones who are pure in their soul, they need to come forward and they need to confront these purveyors of evil and the lie. And they really need to be exposed. Then they need to be brought down. The people who are doing this need to be removed from their positions of power. I don't advocate retribution. I certainly don't advocate violence towards these people. But in some cases, violence may be necessary because they will certainly use violence against us. So, again, it's difficult. But the people who are leading us to doom and destruction, who are weaving these horrendous lies about Julian Assange, on the one hand saying, oh, there's no grand jury, on the other hand saying, oh, actually, we're talking about it and we're trying to work out the best approach and we're going to give the Americans all the assistance we can so they can grab him. But then when they're asked publicly, officially, they say, oh, no, we don't know anything about that. And this is Kim Beazley, a stalwart of the Labour Party going back decades. The people that have found their way into the highest rungs of power are totally corrupt. They've fallen into an abyss. I cannot imagine the mental, spiritual state of someone like Kim Beazley to have such a duplicitous, such a truly evil way of manipulating information. And, you know, a person's life hangs in the balance there. And we're not just talking about Julian Assange either, the whistleblowers. Bradley Manning, locked up in horrendous circumstances in a military brig in the US. And, of course, that whole apparatus of the war on terror and Guantanamo Bay and our collusion in that outrage against human rights, which just continues. I mean, Guantanamo Bay is still open. The alleged 9/11 conspirators still haven't gone to trial. I don't even know what's going on with that. They've been talking about this trial for years. It never seems to happen. The people who have put this together are, you're paying taxes, you're supporting them. We have to stop supporting them. And I don't know quite what that means. I think it entails something different for every individual. For me, it entails doing this show and, of course, a number of public events that I've organized, film nights, protests. And it's a small effect. And I'm frustrated at my inability to have actually really brought about any change. But, you know, you just put together the small efforts of a few thousand people and really it starts to become quite huge. Well, we're coming to the end of the first hour. I'll be joined in the second hour by Josh Jackson again. He was with us last week. And in the second hour, I'm going to actually talk to Josh. I'm going to continue in the same vein here, but I want to get into the question of security and how the apparatus of security, of making people safe, has just become this horrendous mess of interference and inconvenience and an outright barbaric tyranny. And I'm going to get into some specifics here, not just general ranting. So please stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be back right after the break for Hour 2.